Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Doing some very rich programming recently. In the studio with me today, Ben Starr and Julian Joyola, my associate producers, and also with us, Lisa Arnone. Lisa is one of my associates who work here at the center. She's always been welcomed and glad she could join us. We're talking today about this one concept that's been in my mind, which has to do with possessiveness. Every time I look at possessiveness in any form, it has a negative valence. So I'm wondering, you know, everywhere you look at, if anybody says the word possessive, somebody says, well, that's not good. They say the Bible says possessiveness and jealousy are forbidden because actually, in effect, only God has the right to be possessive. Because he is the only, or he, the Buddhist believe that you have to let go of all possessions. That if you have to eventually, hopefully you'll become like a Frankfurter, one with everything. You know, your children, according to Khalil Gibran, right? They're not your possessions. He says your children are not your children. They're the yearning of life's longing for itself. Yet, so many people talk about wanting to belong, wanting to be a part of, wanting to be part of a thing. So we want to look at this today, and we're going to look at it with your help, of course. Your help is going to be calling in to be talking to us about this at our, I know there'll be a lot to say. Some people believe that possessiveness does not have to be owned or controlled. That possessiveness doesn't necessarily mean you're owned or controlled. There are a lot of variations of the thoughts on it, so I've asked my two associates to kind of dig into it and see what they came up with.
Well, Armand, as we discussed earlier, I think a lot of how we view the world and how we approach life stems from language. Some thinkers out there believe that the world and reality is built out of language. And so when we look at how most relationships are described, it's with a possessive term. For example, my son, my wife, my mother, my father. A lot of this language is what informs our perception and outlook on life. And we have these words that are inherently possessive, which we use to describe relationships around us. I mean, you wouldn't...
I always feel uncomfortable when somebody says, my wife. You know, and doesn't say their name. Do you feel that way too? Do you get a kind of basic discomfort when you're not using the word, my girlfriend?
It depends whether or not I know the person in question.
I wouldn't have that if somebody said, my buddy. So there is something about the...
There's definitely something lighter about my buddy. Or like my dog. It's my dog. It's not...
But is it your dog?
Is it?
Is it the dog's yearning for life itself? No. Okay. It's like saying my property. You know, as if somebody owns a piece of land. They say, oh, that's my land. But how could it be your land? How could it be your heir? It's like saying, this is my heir, and it's all right. But since we have such a negative valence to this word possessiveness, we have to look a little further into it, because on the other hand, we keep seeing people who want to belong. They want to be part of something that is possessive. I want to belong to you. I want you to belong to me. So we have that. On one hand, we have that. And on the other hand, we have this, but you shouldn't want that. So let's take a look at that today. Our telephone number, by the way, is 212-957-2729. Lisa.
Well, I think that the the need and the desire to belong, to be part of, is so strong that at least initially, it overwhelms anything else. You know, to not be alone. But then what comes in are other things, like feeling restricted or feeling constrained by the belonging.
So at the very beginning, Well, didn't you say something about your child who asked you?
Yeah, my son asked me, he was pretty young, 3 or 4. He said, "Do you own me?" And I said, "Well, no, I don't own you. You're my son, so we're a family, and you're part of me, but I don't own you." And he said back to me, "No, you own me."
He wanted you to own
me. Yes.
So one would wonder why we, as children, want to be sure that they belong to something. You know, I want to be sure that I am part of. I want to be yours to be protected by you. I want to be watched by you. But one of the reasons that that's possible is because maybe once you know you're owned, you could, in an effort to develop yourself, push back against that which owns you.
I think, you know, it's just the same thing. Once you know you're safe, then you can take risks, right? It happens all with children that are abused. Once you know you have a place, this is where you belong, then you have something to push back against.
Well, maybe you push back against the very same thing that you belong to. Once you feel safe in the arms of your mother, you can resist your mother by pushing away. Mm-hmm. And by pushing away from your mother, and your mother, thinking about a gorilla, a baby gorilla pushes away from mom's arms, it develops muscles. Muscles that will help it deal in the world by pushing away from. So maybe the need to belong is the need to develop a certain musculature, a certain resiliency, a certain ability to be independent.
Yeah, well, you're making me think of rapprochement, where the child has to walk away and then come back, walk away and then come back. So the exercise itself is what's required in order to develop that emotional skill.
And what happens after that?
And then eventually they are able to go away and not be afraid, and they can stay farther and farther away as time goes on.
What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think it's natural for, as Lisa said, for children to want to sort of test the limits and the boundaries, and the key word being safety, feeling safe. That's where I think it all starts, and that's why, for, you know, the example of a young child who wants to know that he belongs or is possessed, maybe, now that we're using the mm-hmm. term possession, mm-hmm. that gives it a sort of a frame of reference, if you will. Mm-hmm. A knowledge of their place in the family and
right,
in the world.
Rudimentary understanding.
Right.
Of what it means to be part of something. You own me. I belong here.
And that's important, I think, especially in the early stage of a child's life, for developing an identity and an outlook and a feeling of belonging.
Right. All the things that they don't know, because they're just, you know, formless in a certain way. I mean, they have a will, but they don't know about the world.
We could judge it all we want, but, you know, there are all those football shirts that people wear when they go to a stadium, and they all wear the same thing, and they belong to it, soccer matches, you know, or the class ring that you get when you graduate and you keep your class ring on. I belong, I belong, I belong. I am part of something. And it's almost like the school is yours, my school. So there is a yearning to be a part of, a yearning to be a part of is one, a yearning to be possessed is another. Hypnosis is a very interesting subject because people love to be hypnotized. They want you to have the ability to, in effect, own their mind. Give me possession, let me have possession of my mind, let you have it. And they kind of turn this over to people. Hey, we got a caller on the line. Let's take a call. Diana, this is Armand DeMille. Oops. That was Diana. Diana's not there anymore. Diana, you're going to have to call back. Oh, I think she's calling back. So we're fighting against this feeling, and we're welcoming it on the other hand, and we're going to get to more ways that we welcome it.
It's a surrender. It's a surrender. At least when it comes to hypnosis.
Diana, hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello. You're very controversial. It's fascinating. But
when you say controversial, because we're talking about something
yes.
that people don't want to talk about, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
Now, have you wanted to be possessed?
Well, how do you feel about point of reference?
For example?
Like attraction, revulsion. You know, if there's a duality in life, in everything, like yin and yang or whatever, there's a certain duality that makes it exciting. When there's no magnetism, when there's no polarity, there's nothing to fight for, you know? Like if someone plays a game and then everyone walks away, you're by yourself, then you walk away.
So you like the valence. You like the energy exchange.
There has to be. I mean, that's just nature. It's like point of reference. But what makes you feel secure? Some people feel secure in their mother's arms, but to me, I don't feel secure when there are nukes in the world. I don't feel secure. I'm a total tree hugger. You know, I don't feel secure when there's fracking, when there's war. You know, it's your point of reference. I think the world is my home. I don't think my mother's arms are giving me security. You know,
but,
I mean?
You know, the arms of the tree are.
The tree, baby, the tree, right.
You know, the tree does. The tree does give you the feeling that you belong to something.
Right.
You know, and what about with people, Diane? Have you had in your life, have you had people who tried to possess you?
Ah, I run so fast away. I can't stand that. When they say, where have you been? What were you doing? Who is that on the phone? Oh, I like, goodbye. Hello.
Okay, so you wind up with people. Now, this is very interesting.
Because they want you more when you run. The more you run, the more they want you, the more exciting it is. So then you keep... It's a vicious cycle, you know?
So you wind up with people who chase you, and you believe that it excites them to chase you.
No, it's not like I wind up. I don't wind up. People create a great persona when they're in the initial stages, you know, of relationships. And it's very common for men to be possessive because that's, you know, they want someone that they can put on their arm like an accoutrement because we live in a sexist world. Men are dominant. That's the fact. I mean, we don't even have the word woman in the Constitution, which we need to do. I know that women are diminished in their importance.
Okay, but as far as you're personally concerned,
yes,
you don't want to be owned.
No, who does?
I'm saying, let's take the judgment off it. You don't want to be owned. You have an aversion to it.
No, I don't have an aversion. It's not own, but own is such a plastic word. It's such a synthetic word.
Okay.
Look what trees do. They sprout little trees, and the little trees are fine, and they grow up. They don't have it. They're right there, but they don't hold each
other.
So
one last, Diana, just because we're going to run short of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever been part of a couple?
Sure, of course.
And during that time
I'm part of a couple right now, but...
And you don't consider any of that to be possessive, right?
In a respectful way.
Okay, that's my question.
Respect. I respect him. He doesn't watch me. Where am I every mm-hmm. second? He's not following me around.
And see, you're connected to him.
Very much, in a deeper way, because there's respect. In other words, I truly believe you can't have a deep connection unless it's like that Sting tune, you know. If you love someone, set them free.
Gotcha.
That's
thank you.
The way, you know. Thank you. Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you
okay,
so
bye.
Much. That's nice. That's nice. Ben?
I think what the last thing she said is something that was on my mind as we were discussing the theme for this show. The old saying, if you love someone, set them free. And that's really about valuing someone else's happiness above your own.
But that's also assuming that you have the power to set them free. You see, in effect, you have to own them to set them free.
Sure.
So it's once again, it starts off with this power that we have. But if you and again, the judgment here is people want to be free. That's the assumption. It's an assumption, an automatic assumption. Everybody wants to be free.
But what about the people that don't?
Right. What about the people that don't, Julian? And there are people that you know, people that you've seen.
Right. Well, for myself, I mean, I know going through acting school and in artists' culture in general, it's this amazing, magical moment when you surrender, when you give in to whatever that force is, whether it be for you God or art or just impulse or something like this. You give into it and it becomes this beautiful moment where you are not you, and instead you are controlled by this impulse. And it's really, really hard. And we spent years trying to give in. And for me, I don't think possessiveness is necessarily this horrible thing. It sounds, it's more of a, like a, we have a dark connotation with it, but it's a very strong force. And I think a lot of people find power in giving in, totally, surrendering.
But I would say again that in order to be able to let go and surrender and give in, you have to have a foundation, a place from which you are held, that allows you to take that huge risk of stepping off.
So if your mind is fragile, and if you feel insecure in the world, then you're going to hold on. And if it means being possessed, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If it means holding on and trying to possess something, that's another manifestation. That's another way. You know, I mean, why do people want to own people? Because they want to feel more secure. Why do people want to own buildings? Why do people want to own cars? Because it's kind of filling up this empty spot. Or it's filling up a spot. I don't want to use the judgment of empty. Our telephone number is 212-957-2729.
Well, people don't want things to change, too. Change is another kind of surrender or letting go.
Well, people are, with the possessions, they're building up their fort. They've got their, you know, somebody buys a building or they buy their house or they buy land and they have this home space that they've built around themselves, these walls that we were talking about before that they have surrounding them, and they get taller and taller as you own more and more. And that's why they have that security there.
In my field, we see hoarding. And we find that something unusual happens with people when they hoard and they start collecting things. There are people I know who order things from Amazon.com, never open the packages, have the packages sitting somewhere in their house, fully in the packages, never touched. And they have a, and over and over again, there are people who will collect newspapers, and there are people who will collect different things, you know, cartons. Boxes that food comes in, stacked to the ceilings. Because in a way, there's a security they have by having all of these things. If you ask someone who is a hoarder why they save all the newspapers, they'll say, because someday I may have to refer to the article. It's like I'm saving this as if it's I may need this at one day, not that I need it today. Fascinating stuff. They also found a certain amount of activity in the anterior cingulate gyrus, a part of the brain, that when it becomes overactive, or the more activity that is in there, the more is the tendency to be a hoarder. So now there seems to be even a chemical part of the brain. So let's think about this for a moment. There's a wonderful story by Franz Kafka called The Burrow, B-U-R-R-O-W, in which he talks about this animal called the burrow. And the burrow is this animal who lives underground, and his purpose in life is to keep his castle keep, what he calls his castle keep, safe from invaders, and so he's got to have enough food in there to survive the winter. And so he keeps collecting things and collecting things and collecting things. It's a fabulous short story. So one of the things that happens is it's a belief that there are certain animals, like squirrels, are going to have to put things away for the future. And there are other people who are not going to have to worry about it because they're going to be footloose. Think about the average person you know. Average person you know, there's going to be one of two categories. Either they have a 1049K, you know, they either have an investment plan for the future, or they don't. The ones who don't said, I'll spend the money now. And they have a good time spending the money now, and they have a really nice life. The ones who have it for the future, they don't have as good a time now, but they have it for the future. They're securing the future. What's the difference? Do you think the difference is the anterior cingulate gyrus? Do you think the difference is some piece of the brain that enables you to do it, or a longer allele, or a DNA that's different than another? Because there is some kind of a difference between these types. There are people who want to possess for the future, and there are people who don't care. They want to spend in the now.
I think it's a personality difference. I don't think it's genetic or scientific, because you see people in the same family who are completely different. You see families where you have the spender and the saver that are very often mm-hmm. very closely related.
But I was thinking it's also cultural because,
sure.
you know, I was in Italy, and in Italy, everything is right now. What are you going to eat for dinner? You buy it today. Here, people go to Costco, build up stock up, and it's a completely different way of approaching life, of the day-to-day living. So,
there are people here who don't go to Costco.
Yeah.
Right? And there are people here who do go to Costco.
Yes.
So I'm sure there's somebody in Italy going to Costco.
Costco.
Costco,
with a basement full of bottled water and wine.
Hey, we've got Ruth on the line. Hi there, Ruth. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. I'd like to make a little comment here about release. To release someone is to respect someone. Everyone needs a respect, and even the ones that we don't think that he does deserve respect, we must respect that person.
Oops.
Yes, I think I have another line. Forgive me.
Oh, you have another call coming
yes,
in.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Of course. That's all right. Are you going to stay with us? No. She left us. Well, again, you know, here again the judgment is, respect is to let it go. But on the other hand, what we keep looking at is people who want to be part of, people who want to belong. And I'm saying if we take off this judgment on possessiveness, maybe people will be able to tell you more about themselves. Because maybe people just want you to, you know, if you have very little mind, or if you don't believe in yourself, or if you feel insecure, it would be nice if somebody embraces you the way you are. Especially if you feel broken. Telephone number here is 212-957-2729. We're taking your calls today. Tomorrow, Linda Vanella will be with us, and we're going to be looking at attention deficit in a different kind of way. The question we're going to be asking is the following. I was talking with a boy the other day who said to me, he said, when my mother and I walk down the street, my mother will start talking to somebody immediately, and I just stand there and I feel invisible. He said, I hate that feeling. And I thought about how many children must feel that way. If the mother does not have the attention, if the mother is somebody who doesn't have the ability to stick with what she's doing, it must happen terribly to the child. What effect does that have on the child is the question. So it's a real teaser. We're going to look at that tomorrow with Linda Vanella as well. 212-957-2729.
You know, you used the example earlier of why do people want to possess cars, or why do people want to possess buildings, for example. And I think that falls into a category of maybe people who are hoarding, but they're hoarding money. They're hoarding valuable things. As you know, I used to work in real estate, and I spoke to many guys who had large portfolios of buildings all over Manhattan. And there was one guy in particular that I remember who had spent his career, his goal was to own a large office building. And that was something that he had strived for his whole life. And when he finally got there, the satisfaction wasn't what he thought it was going to be. And then immediately it became, I need a grade A office building. I need a better office building on a better avenue, on a better intersection. And now he's got five.
It's just high-scale hoarding. It's just hoarding with respectable hoarding.
Well, but again, you know, sometimes you anticipate that you're going to feel complete if you get a certain amount of stuff. And then when the completeness doesn't come, you just assume more of it is going to make you feel complete.
Right, and you spend years building towards something, like the goal of owning an office building, or for some people maybe it's owning a Ferrari. And then finally the day comes, and the satisfaction just isn't what you had built it up to be.
And times it is.
At times, I'm sure it can be.
I drove a 1969 Chevy Cobra last week. It was just what we thought. Hey, this is Armand DeMille. We've got Joan on the line. Hi there, Joan. You're on the air. Hello, Joan. Oops, I'm sorry. My mistake. Hello, Joan. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hi. You brought up a good point about, I just want to say what I feel and why I think I feel that way. When I was a kid, I was ignored and neglected by my parents. I got room and board, and that was about it. No attention at all. So when I got older and got into relationships, I found myself getting involved with extremely possessive people, extremely domineering. And in the beginning, it felt great to have all of that attention. But then after a while, I felt smothered. And I have done this several times with several different relationships. And I was wondering how to break the cycle.
Well, when you say you've done it with several different relationships, you're assuming that the sequence goes as follows. You find somebody who shows enough interest in you, and then you feel smothered. But something takes place in between there. How about the following? How about if I could show you a way to have a relationship with somebody who wants to possess you, and you stay happy forever in that relationship?
That would be great.
For the,
it would. It happens to my siblings, too, because we were all neglected and ignored by our parents.
So the thing that we're looking to do is separate your parents from your relationships in the present. What you currently have is everyone is a symbolic relationship. Now, what if there's something wonderful? Like, do you like to be hugged? I imagine you love to be hugged.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, think of the best hug you could possibly get. Can you imagine one right now?
Yeah.
All right. That feeling of being hugged, how long can you stand it?
I don't know.
5 minutes?
5 minutes. And it's interesting you bring that up, because when I was younger, I could not stand to be touched.
Exactly. That's exactly why I bring it up. So what do you think happened in between the two?
I'm not sure.
So what seems to happen to you is you start off your relationship in your later development, and then after a while, you go back to your earlier development. Now, was your earlier development, the one where you couldn't feel anything, was that around your adolescence, where you didn't want to be held?
Yes.
All right, so we're beginning to find something. Therefore, when you first meet someone, it's a mature Joan who meets someone and feels close. And then at some point, Joan reverts to the adolescent Joan, who doesn't want to be so close anymore and has this kind of aversion. And now that kind of thing probably goes back to what happened to you as an adolescent. Now I'm going to go real specific. How was your father's reaction to your getting your period?
My father was never around. I don't remember ever talking to him until I was 25.
Really?
I mean, he was there, but not there.
When you had your menses...
I don't remember him being a part of that conversation whatsoever.
Was your mother a part of that conversation?
I believe so, but I don't really remember.
It's a funny thing for it not to be a big deal, you know. It's a funny thing that's blanked from your mind.
There's a lot that's blank as far as their involvement in my life. Like, yeah. I said, I had room and board. That was about it.
I hear. Well, listen, Joan, it sounds like there's some work that we can get to. That sounds like something, it's a door that's open, that's ready to be reopened. You know, you get to a point where you can examine just about anything. I want to thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Joan. So we can have, within the same relationship, we can have times where we have we can be one way one moment, wanting something one moment, and then it turns around. But it doesn't just turn around. Something happens that brings about an earlier stage of development. We're going to talk about that more when we get back from our break. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then we'll be talking to you again.
You know you done me wrong, baby.
B.B. King, the thrill is gone. You once owned me, but now the thrill is gone. It's gone. See, so that brings us to possessiveness. And that's the idea of being in a possessive relationship. For a while, the thrill is hot. And part of what's hot is the chase. I'm going to get you. I'm going to tie you up. I'm going to hold you. I'm going to kiss you while I have you all tied up. I'm going to make love to you all tied up. Everything is fine. I'm going to try to get away. I'm fighting against the odds. One of the things we found with S&M relationships, masochism or acting out submissiveness in a sexual way, one of its appeals is bondage. Now, why is bondage so good? You know, why does it lead to such heightened sexuality? Well, turns out that when a person is tied up, they're fighting against their bonds. They're stressing against their bonds. Their wrists are being held aside. They're fighting against it. When they're doing that, they're releasing more endorphins. And the release of additional endorphins leads to a potentially greater orgasm. So it makes sense that, you know, you would be using a kind of self-imposed bondage to kind of bring yourself to that heightened spot. I think even a lot of the strangulation stuff that people do during sex is related to that, but that's probably a subject for another time. Lisa?
Well, I was thinking about what you were what you were saying to the last woman in the sense that what happens in the present is connected to what's happened in your childhood. So there's a natural development in childhood of needing to feel like you belong and maybe that you're owned, and then needing to break away from those bonds, to grow away from those bonds. But if you don't get the original, if you don't get the original holding, the original I own you, you're mine, like she didn't, then the whole enterprise is really perilous as you get older.
So what happens, Lisa, as you guide people through the sequence of discovery? Because Lisa, by the way, Lisa Arnone is a psychotherapist, and she works a lot with young women. And in working with somebody who kind of exposes and brings out the diagram of their life, by examining it, does it relieve the pressure?
I certainly think that examining it helps. But in that particular case, I think the relationship is one of the most curative parts of being in therapy.
Which relationship?
The relationship with the therapist.
Relationship with you?
Yes, sitting in the room with someone who is engaged, interested, consistent, and caring over a period of time, something that was missing.
You know, it's a thing, if I think about it as a therapist, and I'm sure you could go with this, when a client is really engaged, there is like a possession going on in the room. It's kind of you turn yourself over, you know, and there's something beautiful about that.
Yeah.
And it enables healing. And luckily, at the end of an hour, it stops.
Mm-hmm. But it's based on a mutual trust. Mutual.
Thank you for being with us, Lisa. I know you got to run off. You have appointments. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Armand.
You know, WBAI, Lisa Arnone.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Sure. We have someone on the line. Roman. Hi, this is Armand DeMiglio on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I was the discussion has moved on, but I was just uncomfortable with that word of owning.
Uh-huh. It is an uncomfortable word, isn't it?
I think it comes from we live in a society where we buy things and we own them then, and that's so dominating in our world that you know we use it. In recent times, the word owning is often used when someone is ridiculed to an extent where that person ridiculing will be depicted as he owns this or that person, or physically dominating someone. You see Jack owning John, and it's depicted in that way. I think it's
have you ever been, Roman, have you ever been in the situation where you've had to confront that yourself personally, as opposed to, you know, the societal sense? Have you ever had to really deal with that? What about in relationships yourself?
Well, my relationships haven't been very possessive. I've been possessive of of like wanting to have a family and sticking to that, to a goal of having a safe family. Like I had a broken family when I grew up, and I when I founded a family of my own, it was a big project for me, and I wanted to stick to it, and I stuck to it up to a point where I I lost myself in this big achievement that I wanted to.
Well, now that's really important. You see, you're teaching us. That's exactly what happens. We bring ourselves to an ideal where we want to belong to something, and then as we want to belong, we lose ourselves. What you wanted to do was belong to a family where you were present.
Yeah.
But what happened was you gave up your own presence. Not gave it up, but it disappeared.
Yeah, well, it's depression is about 6 years behind me, and therapy I'm still into, and but it's, you're always learning about yourself.
So when you, Roman, so in your courage, right, you were in this relationship and the depression kind of came in. Did it come in during the relationship while you were building the family, or did it happen after the family?
Well, my children were already grown, and I think I was in that phase where you have to redefine your relationship.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And we just missed out on that somehow. And but depression just made me stop and start thinking about my problems. I was, it threw me out of my work. I couldn't concentrate anymore. And it was just the way that my mind said, hey, deal with your problems. You just can't ignore them anymore.
And where do you go from here, Roman? What's your goal?
Well, my long year marriage ended. I separated because we just didn't find a connection anymore. But the thing is, I'm finding myself as who I am and who I was trying to be.
Sometimes you got to let go of the desire to own, possess, or be possessed until you could find one thing, which is to possess yourself. Which is what you're doing. You're learning to find out who Roman is.
Right, right.
You know, you're doing your way of finding out who you are, and you're going to take that to your next relationship, which would have a definite different quality to it.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you, Roman. It's been a hard fight from what I could hear.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. But I just want to say I'm calling from Munich, Germany. I'm listening to WBAI from abroad. I'm an expatriate. And thanks a lot for the show you're doing.
I'm really glad, and thank you for calling from Munich, Germany. We've got people around the world, and little clubs everywhere. So thank you, thank you.
Great.
Stay with us.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye.
All right. That was Roman from Munich, right? We had somebody listening from Ireland the other day. You weren't here, Ben. You didn't hear this one. We had a woman who was cooking in Ireland, and she picked up the show, and then she put her grandmother, who was doing the actual cooking, on the phone, and we spoke to Ireland. It was great. They told us their attitude towards the positive mind. 212-957-2729. What a brave man. Now, imagine that guy. You know, if you think about Roman, you think about what he's gone through. Hey, you know, I wonder nowadays where Youssef is. I bet I found him. Hi, Youssef. It's Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. How are you doing?
Good, good, good.
I have 2 points. You spoke about some childhood behavior or coming back in the adulthood. I'm seeing that difference in my life. I was, I was brought up with my two parents, my mom and dad. I was a last of 11. But I was kind of a really stubborn kid when I was a kid, like very, very stubborn, very bully, very, very bully. But,
I don't understand. Youssef, go back a second. You were one of 11 children.
Lots of them.
There were a lot of children.
I was the last.
You were the last of 11 children.
Yep.
And they possessed you. You became, because you were the youngest, you got more attention than everybody else?
I was the one that was bullied. Like, there wasn't bullying me. I was the one that bullied.
Uh-huh.
So,
But when I grew up, I thought
You know, I can't hear you very well because I think your voice is fading. Just stay a little, stay closer to the phone, okay?
Okay, yeah, I should tell phone. I have it towards my ears. I don't know why, but can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah? I can, yes.
Okay, so what I was saying, nobody bullied me, but I was the one that bullied people. You see that? But now when I grew up, I found that it became negative. Like, anytime I see somebody bully somebody, it hurts me so bad.
Uh-huh.
And so compared to what you're saying, like, with the lady that came earlier before me, you saying that what she was inside when it came back, I've kind of like, opposite way in my life.
Yeah, I hear. You know, I wish we had a better phone connection because I would love to talk back. I could barely hear you.
Yeah, I'll call back again then.
Okay, thank you. Youssef, who always has something to say of value, 212-957-2729. You know, when you're part of a big family, you know, that's a very interesting thing. Where do you stand? Because I know one guy, right, Kevin, who is part of 11 kids. Right, and there, it's you either are going to be part of it, or you're going to rebel against it.
Stay out on the fringes.
Right? How were you in your family? Were you out on the fringes?
Well, we weren't a big family. My immediate family, I just have one sibling, so we were a pretty small immediate family. But I do have a good amount of extended relatives, cousins.
Did you feel good about the cousins and the extended family?
It depends. It's real situational. On one side, they're all overseas, and so I was never...
Are they in Munich? I'm only kidding.
They're not in Munich, but I was always kind of like the American one.
Right.
So I was never really fully a part of that part of the family, even though I like them a lot and they're great people. It's just I never felt really fully...
So when you visited one of the events where everybody was present, did you feel like an alien or did you feel like you belonged there?
There was a real feeling of both.
Both.
Constantly.
Interesting. Let me ask Julian the same thing. Julian, you've got family. I know you've got family because your family and mine is the same.
Yes, we do. Yeah, and I also have family.
But you also have family from...
I have family in Taiwan.
And
I have an entire
family.
And I actually never met them until I was 18. And I definitely feel the same way about this duality in both feeling as an alien and also belonging. And it's weird. It's a weird thing to not just feel one all the way.
But you know, some of the Joyellos, that's part of our family, some of them on that side, they all feel part of it. You know, there is a group. I mean, you and I both feel like outsiders.
Yes, definitely.
But there is a group of them who is absolutely feel together.
Well, you know, and then also we've got our group. It's me, you, my father. And, you know...
We're the rebels.
We've got our... We're the rebel group now. We've got our own group. but definitely. There's a separation, but there's also these separate groups. We're not alone, necessarily, in that, too.
And people in family gatherings and people who are listening, who are parts of families, can sometimes find those families so toxic. It's so difficult because they, in effect, own you. Whatever you do, you're being seen. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do, you're being judged.
That's a big one, is the judgment. That can be stifling. And another thing that I think Julian and I have in common is when you have two parents from two separate cultures, and so the two sides of your family are rather different, and you're a mixture of the two, and you're trying to decide, where do I fit? Where is my place in each one? Do I have to choose one? Can I be both?
I mean, it was quite refreshing to go to Taiwan and meet that family. And honestly, in a lot of ways, I felt like I belonged there a lot more. I mean, not necessarily my immediate family, my father and my sister, I feel very connected. But my the rest of my Joyella family, other than Armand, it's like I felt more like I was at home with my family in Taiwan than I did sometimes.
So it's interesting. Both of you come from two different cultures. In family heritage, both of you were actually felt alienated or separated when you were part of the family gatherings. Yet you're looking at people who really feel like they're a part of it, right?
Right.
Right, definitely.
What's the feeling towards them? I remember looking at one, I think it was Frankie. And I said to myself, he's having such a good time being part of this. And I don't want to be part of this. Do you know that feeling?
Yeah, it's like I see that these people are there, and I just don't necessarily want to be in that spot. Yeah, I know. I mean, I know me and you feel a lot of the same way about our family here. We found our own place rather than sharing that one.
I do want to feel and see myself as a part of it, but sometimes it's very hard to overcome that alienation for whatever reason, whether it comes from within or it comes from someone else.
Right.
A lot of times it's hard to...
It could be language, it could be time, it's, you know, but...
And age at sometimes, yeah. Too.
Well, let's talk about the family that we formed here, the three of us. Right? Here we have something, right? You get this sense every time we get together to do radio and we
definitely.
Do research.
Definitely. I mean, we've definitely found family in this spot. If not in our real family, we've found family through this show.
And even in this spot, in this room.
In this room, yeah.
What's it like?
It's great. It feels good. I feel very comfortable here.
And so that sense is the sense that we always wanted. We always wanted here, and we wanted the same sense we want on the outside.
Well, I think back to when I first started listening to this show years ago, and I felt like the listening audience was part of an extended family. When I would hear a lot of the same callers calling in, and it seemed almost as if you were this sort of benevolent patriarch that these people were calling on the air, and it was a very private thing that was actually public.
Mm.
That was always my impression.
So all we need to do is, if you guys get married or you're going to live with somebody, go get a studio. You see, when they say you get a studio apartment, not a studio.
It
means a broadcast studio. Because we know in broadcast studios, you get the good stuff. Hey, we've got David on the line. Let's grab that. Hi, David. This is Armand DeMille.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going back to the point you're talking about real estate and hoarding. And I grew up in a home that I never had my own bedroom. So I always find myself buying properties that have multiple bedrooms and more than my family can live in. And I'm starting to realize that as I get them, I'm not really happy once I get them. It's just more work and more money to keep it. And as you acquire one, you want to keep acquiring more of them.
When you were a kid, what was the problem with not having additional bedrooms? No privacy?
I was the last of six.
Whew. So did you never have privacy, ever?
Not really. I don't... Never my own space.
You never had your own space?
No.
That's really tough. What about in relationships? If you get in a relationship with somebody else, do you find in that relationship you have the same kind of need to have your own space?
That's very funny. That's why I'm afraid to get married, because I'm always saying I want to have, you know, separate bedrooms, two bathrooms, you know, just space.
Wow. We used to do an experiment a while back. We used to get couples, and we'd have them, they were doing, it's called premarital counseling. We would have them be in a room together for 72 hours, and they would just be in the room, and nothing was allowed in, no radio, no newspaper, no nothing, just so they would get to know each other, and they would get to see what it's like to be in that closed space. It turned out being quite an amazing bit of information that people would get out of it. For you, David, you're saying, I'm afraid that if I ever got with somebody, I'm not going to be able to stand it. I'm going to need to have more stuff. And the worst thing that you could probably do is to get the extra bedroom, is to get the separate space, because that would just perpetuate the fear. When you're ready for it, David, I promise you, you'll be ready to live in a studio, especially if it's one like ours, a broadcast studio, because everything good happens here. We have to be going.
Thanks for taking my call. Have a good
David,
day.
It is wonderful to hear from you. Thank you. We'll be back with you tomorrow, my friends. We're going to be addressing with Linda Vanella the attention deficit disorder. My special thanks, Lisa Arnone, who was with us, Ben Starr, Julian Gioiello.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
To all you guys at BAI, engineers, etc., thanks so much. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1:00.